accession number 19057, reel 6.
Any record, reel 6.
The period in Hinglow took us from the 1st of April to the 4th of April. 4th of April, we reformed as a new troop. I had a new tank commander, Sergeant Freddie Jones, and a new troop leader, Ken, Lieutenant Ken, straight out of Ken Hunt, his name, and second Lieutenant Ken Hunt. He was straight out of England. He was our new troop leader. So we was on the road again. 4th troop, I think, led for the first section. That's from the 2 or 3 days. This is now about the 8th and 9th of April. 4th troop left, and my particular friend, Glenn Jones, who now lives in North Wales, he was in that tank, and at Hazelun, they got hit a roadblock, and they got mortared, and he got wounded, and two of his crew got wounded, and they went back. And then my troop took over, but as it was a new troop leader, we were supposed to be an experienced crew, so my troop tank was asked to lead. One last bloody order to lead. And it was just a single road. And you're leading the whole bloody armies behind you. So you're crawling along in forest area. There's Germans either side of you in the forest. You've got the 14th KRR, or your own personal infantry, trying to keep pace with you and to keep the German from coming up to the edge and firing their Panzerfaust. And the tank commander's looking over the top. He's got a Sten gun. The gunner's looking in front and firing at everything that moves in front. I'm looking over the left, and I've got grenades, and I'm chucking into the forest, because occasionally you're getting fired at by these paratroop infantry, which were both sides of us. We're crawling along. We weren't going to do any other bloody way. And then we've been going. My friend got hit about midday. By about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we've been crawling along for about 3 hours. And our control come on the radiator. Look, this won't do. You're crawling along. Will the troop leader please take over and speed up the things? We must push on to get ahead of it. Regardless of opposition, push on. So he Wilco's takes over the lead. Goes 20 yards, because he's new to the game. He gets Panzerfaust, the tank's hit. He's killed, two in the turret are killed. The driver, who was a friend of mine, Charlie Stamp, he had bailed out. And we had one of these funnies with us, with the ARV, on a Churchill tank. He'd come up to us and was firing petards in the forest. And the tank's hit 20 yards in front, and he comes up to my tank and he says to the sergeant, one of your crew come up with me to get the chap out the tank up the front. And so the sergeant turned to me, you go. So I wasn't going to get up on the Churchill tank. It was a bit exposed, and they was firing. Germans were firing in the woods at us. So I jumped down, and there was a ditch along the left-hand side. I think our tank must have backed up, because the tank was about 100 yards in front. And I got about 50 yards, and then there's a German kid. He was younger than I was. I was only 18. And a German kid with a stick grenade. And he pulls it out and chucks it at me, but I think he was more nervous than I was because he forgot to unscrew it and arm it. He just chucked it and he hadn't armed it. And I pointed back to the tank to brass him up in that left of the woods, then ran on up to the tank and the Churchill tank and got up to it. And I got up to the tank and we climbed up to the turret and the troop leader was dead. The gunner was dead because the Panzerfaust had hit that side of the turret. But the wireless operator had lost both legs, but he was still alive, so we got him out. And I think at that point I'd lost my nerve during the war. I've been all right up to then, but getting them out for the rest of the war... I'd lost confidence, I think. But anyway, got him out, come up the back, sent them back, and control come up. We're parking the field at just another 100 yards up there, and the Churchill had gone back, and I was still looking for the driver, who was a friend of mine. I see him bail out, then go round in the wood. I thought I'd go round the tank, and as I went round the tank, there was like a slit trench, and where the Germans had fired from, and looked in it. And then there's a movement in the bottom, and two Germans were still in there, and they had everything in there with them, Panzerfaust, Smeisers, Spandos. I pulled a revolver out to say, "Rouse you buggers," and at that moment remembered I'd unloaded my revolver when we was in Hengelo. I had an unloaded revolver, but that didn't do my nerves a lot of good. Anyway, they come out, and this time I didn't remember the search, and I got 120 guilders and a wristwatch, but sent them back, but there was an altercation when we parked. I took bringing them back because at the time, after the war, we had a heavyweight boxer in our squadron, Huey MacDonald, and he fought an exhibition with Walter Neusel, and he was going to pan these because the crew had been friends of his, and he was going to hit these two Germans who had Panzerfaust our tank. One of our troop leaders had to pull a revolver on him to stop him. It's just an altercation. He might have hit them, but he wouldn't have done them a lot of harm. But while all this was going on, we were parked in this field for the night. C Squadron took over the lead from us, and while we was there, our padre was burying the dead in the field, in a corner of this field. He said, "I'm burying the dead, and bugged if about 20 Germans didn't come out and surrender to me." And he got it all down in his book. Our 20 come out and surrendered to the padre.
Did you find your friend?
Yes, he'd gone back. He'd had an altercation in the wood with someone he had met a German who fired at him. This was the fifth time. He was a Lance Corporal, and as a Lance Corporal driver, he was always the troop leader's driver, and it was the fifth. This was the fifth troop leader it had killed on him, and he was. He had come up to the field and he said, "I've had enough. The fifth is enough." He said, "I can't go on anymore." He had grazed his leg badly bailing out of this tank. He said, "I'll have to see if I can give myself a blighty one." So he said, got some cow muck and rubbed in this graze. He said, "That'll go bloody septic soon and I'll get sent back." bugged if the bloody thing didn't heal up straight away. But he soldiered on to the end. But bloody marvellous. Any other time, it would have gone septic, his leg, but it healed up straight away. He said, I've never known a cure like it.
So what was your opinion of these? Were they all paratroopers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The second paratroop army, they was all young boys, and I'll come a bit more onto them later, because the next day, C Squadron had taken over the lead. They were hit at Lastrup, and my particular friend in Weymouth was taken POW, but he's one of our comrades down at Bournemouth. But then we took over the lead again to take the town of Cloppenburg, which is on the route up to Bremen. For that action, they said we'd had a rough day of it on the route up. We were given an easy job. Whilst the squadron attacked the village, well, it's a small town. Out on the far right, there were some haystacks, and the town sort of curved round, and there was a stream on it. But as the town curved round, two haystacks were in a prominent position on a hill on the right, and you could watch the exit from the town from them. So my tank was sent over to these two haystacks. Well, we get near it and finds these two haystacks were defended by a German paratroop unit. And they said, the rest of the squadron down in the road said, "You give us some amusement. You were chasing round these bloody haystacks and the Germans were stepping out and firing at you." And I loosed off a whole box of Browning at them, and then the last one, to put a new belt in, cocked it, and the last round is stuck up there, the barrel, and pulling it back, the gun was red hot and cooked off and split my hand right across. But then the gun was jammed, and then some silly bugger stepped out with a Panzerfaust straight at us, and a machine gunner jammed, fired a bloody 17-pounder. So we fired a 17-pounder at him. It was only 20 yards in front, blew it to smithereens, and at that, the whole lot surrendered. And we found inside the stack there was a hidey place with a hidey hole with a load of Panzerfaust and machine guns in there. Well, we stayed there all day, and we was to shoot up. During the day, we were shooting up Germans trying to get into the town. And at the end of the day, we were shooting up Germans getting out of the town. But it was a tragic result, that the crossroad, because at the end of the day, I think it was 4th Troop there. Their sergeant tank had got up to the crossroad, and he had got bazookaed, and the crew had bailed out, and there was a crossroad there with a German dead on the crossroad with his arm outstretched. He had a wristwatch on it, and of course a couple of them tried to dash across and get the wristwatch, and a couple were killed trying to get the bloody wristwatch off him. Colonel give us a right rollicking over that, getting killed for a wristwatch. But the troop sergeant, he had been all the way from, this was now towards the end of April, and he had been in every action of the regiment, and then joined the regiment from 1939. And here he was, killed right at the end of the war. Very upset us. Shuey's age, his name was. He was one of the safest sergeants we had. That was Cloppenburg. There's quite a few casualties there. We also did a bank robbery there. While the while we was round at these two haystacks, you know, the town had been taken, but nobody had gotten into it. And one of our tanks come right. They was on the main street, and he sent his co-driver running round. Fourth house from the end. Well, we knocked the wall down. You know, it was a request. You'd be asked to for a line of fire. So we went up to this, knocked the wall down. It was a bank. We was knocking the back of the wall down. But inside there was a strong room. And we couldn't get any guns round to it. So someone said, well, there's some Panzerfaust in that hidey hole up by the haystacks. Go and get one of them. So we went up back there with the tank, went in the hidey hole, and a German had slipped in there and was hiding in there, you know, waiting for all the action to go by. And so we picked him up with a Panzerfaust and come back and got him to fire the Panzerfaust at this strong room door. Well, a tank and a Panzerfaust is marvellous for a bank heist. He fired it, he looked at us and saw what we was doing, and he smiled and he said, where do you want it put? And he said, just above the lock. And we fired it, nice round hole. The lock was blown, opened it. Of course, a Panzerfaust, it makes a nice round hole, and all the everything inside is destroyed. So our bank job come to nothing. Everything in it was destroyed. And but that's one of the amusing stories. We've only got German marks, and we couldn't use them anyway. But then we, the next, we weren't in much action then until we cross the Weser. We were earmarked to, while 30 Corps with 3rd British Div, 43rd British Div and 7th Armoured Corps done a frontal attack on Bremen, we bridged the Weser and skirted right way round and come up behind Bremen, and chap Wingfield's just written a book about it. It's a complete cock-up, his book. The action was a front attack, and it was a major attack, and while we was going round, the RAF bombed the town with a 1,000 bomber raid, which we witnessed outside, and then we attacked from the back, which was lightly defended, but we went through several roadblocks which we knocked aside, and we got right back into the centre of the park with a great big blockhouse with Northern Area Command Post, German Northern Area Command Post, with General Becker, all our tanks lined up round it, pointed all at the command post, and then the white flag come out and General Becker and his aides come out, and he wouldn't surrender to our troop leader, so we had to go and get our squadron leader, who was a higher rank, for him to surrender to, and that's it. Ian McKay, our squadron leader, and he's most upset when the general knocked the glass out of his binoculars before handing them over. Most unsporting. But they were led off, and then it was a free-for-all in looting in this German high command blockhouse. And
did you find anything interesting?
Yes, we did. Everybody was after booze. I didn't drink. So I got 10,000 Turkish cigarettes and 2,000 cigars. And from that day to the time I left the army, I lived on those cigarettes. I never drew any army pay. So when I come out of the army 2 years later, I had 2 years' pay and come out with 2 years' pay. But, you know, I went up to Berlin with 5,000 cigarettes and sold them for 5 marks a cigarette. You know, we lived like kings with cigarettes. But we'd taken Bremen. Other people went up to Bremerwald and took that, but we were on the route to Hamburg. This was now nearly the end of the war, and every two miles they had a Luftwaffe bomb which blew the road for about 100 yards. So we had to have 7 bridges to bridge the road when we crossed, and I think it was about the 6th of May we reached the town of Nuremberg when it was declared the no more fighting. We was due to attack a village, the next village where we knew some SS were holding out, but 12 o'clock we was all firing will cease at that day. So about 11 o'clock, everybody was drunk by then. We were going up to this farmhouse and sort these SS out, be the last shots in World War II. Well, I think about 6 of our tanks went up that road. 4 ended up in ditches. The guns were pointed full elevation. We blew the house to pieces, and I think we staggered back, and I don't think anybody saw the night through. But the next morning, the SS had all disappeared, and I think they thought better of it when we was coming up. But the tanks were ditched, and the officers were all gone on the booze, and we were all on the booze. And I've got a picture of the church parade on that day at Nuremberg, and that's the end of the war.
So, is there any point in me asking you what your reaction was to the end of the war?
Actually, the last part of the war, we was all very nervous with the last trip going up that road towards Hamburg. The one chap I joined the squadron with me together in September, he was in the lead tank and he was killed. Derek Miles. He's such a nice chap. And that's it. Didn't want to know anything then after that. I wasn't too keen on doing any more soldiering. Yeah, at the end of the war, we stayed around Nuremberg for 2 or 3 days, and then we were on tank transporters all the way down to Hanover, guarding DP camps.
What did that entail?
Displaced persons. Actually, our role then was to stop the Russian DPs coming out at night when they got hooched up and slaughtering the German civilians round about. And we was put on guard on these DP camps, and the Russians would get hooched up, and they'd come 11 o'clock, 12 at night, they'd come charging out, and then about 3 or 4 in the morning, they'd come sloping in again. They'd offer us any amount of loot, but one chap on guard wasn't going to stop a few hundred Russians coming out, not after what they'd gone through. And then you'd be in the guard room. We had, to keep us quiet, apparently what the Russians had been doing with German guards is providing women for the German guards all night. And it's quite a shock to find that you're on guard you get come off guard and you sleep in your bunk and you find a Russian woman climbing in with you. And I think we turf them out. We was more interested in running card schools. And we was playing nine card breaks with all the German loot money we had. But that was DP camps. But it soon ended because we were sent up to Magdeburg, another 120 miles forward, on tank transporters to Luderitz, and we took over from the 81st US Infantry, who were supported at Garnenkirchen. They'd built the Friendship Bridge across the River Elbe at Magdeburg, and we stayed there about 6 weeks until August 45, when the Potsdam Agreement brought us 120 miles back. But while we was there, they asked if I could type. Well, they knew I could type, touch type, and they wanted someone who could touch type. They was doing a it was ostensibly a guard of honour for Montgomery in Berlin. We was to go up over the Friendship Bridge, drive the 60 miles into Berlin and provide a guard of honour. But it wasn't only that. We were there if the Potsdam Agreement broke down to be an assault regiment for Berlin. And we were to do a recce of the route into Berlin. So there's myself and our intelligence officer and some interpreters. They were British Army corporals, but they could speak Russian and German fluent. They were intelligence officers, they weren't corporals. And the second truck was the guard of honour that was to, you know, the smartest blokes in the regiment were going up for this guard of honour. So we drove on. But we got to Friendship Bridge, and the Russians wouldn't let us across at daylight. So we had to wait till night, and they'd let us drive at night. But it was a bright moonlight night. So we was going along, and the Russian escort were getting very annoyed at us, because, you know, every so often they'd have to get out for a leak every crossroad, and then the engine would overheat, and then something would go wrong with the engine. They were spying out the route into Berlin, and most of the Russians we passed were horse-drawn, and we was looking at units, what units they were, and I was just a trooper, just a typist. That's what I was going up for.